Hi, Dominic Steele here, and I chair Liberty Christian Ministries, and we're about serving the same-sex attracted Christian, helping to live in a biblically faithful way. To that end, we're really excited that Ed Shaw is coming to Australia in August. We've got him speaking at three significant events that are going to be live-streamed. On Tuesday, the 20th of August, it's a full-day conference, Creating a Biblically Faithful, Inclusive Church. And I hope that you can come or be part of it via live stream and bring your whole church staff team and leadership group. On the Wednesday night, it's an evening for your community group, either on the live stream or at Moore College in Newtown. And we're just opening that up, and Ed's going to be talking about what does Jesus have to say about our sexualities. And then on the Friday night, it's an evening for youth. And Jesus is good news for a rainbow world. It's at St. Paul's Carlingford, or network via live stream to your youth group. Ed Shaw, the author of The Plausibility Problem, he's coming to Sydney for 1 week in August, and I hope you can be part of it. Dominic Steele here for The Pastor's Heart, and today we're talking resilience in ministry. Now, we have people watching, listening to us around the world, but in my circles, there's been what I'd call a spate of resignations of ministers from senior roles over the last few months. Ministers of significant teams, largest churches, who've surprised many of us by resigning and switching roles to become team members, ministry teams, or chaplaincy, or something like that. And there is a conference coming up in August dealing with the whole issue of resilience in ministry. And I've invited two of the key presenters of that conference, Paul Grimmond, the Dean of Students at Moore Theological College in Sydney, and also Kirsty Bucknell. And Kirsty, you're an organisational psychologist. That's right. And just finished a research master's on this whole area of resilience in ministry and just about to go into a PhD.
That's right.
But before we come to them, if you could help us get the word out on The Pastor's Heart. If you're on the Apple Podcasts, it'd be great if you could give us a review or a rating. If you're with us on YouTube, it'd be terrific if you could subscribe. But particularly if you could let friends in ministry know about The Pastor's Heart. We're trying to serve senior pastors, but also anyone on the pastoral staff and senior leaders in the church. It was lovely, actually. I was in Capitol Hill in Washington last couple of weeks ago and speaking to the preacher there, and he said how helpful The Pastor's Heart had been in stimulating thinking in his ministry. And it's great for us to know that our little efforts here are being helpful in serving you wherever you are around the place. Now, Paul, Kirsty, thanks for joining us. Paul, if we start with you, I think the last time I saw you, you and I, we were both speaking at a conference on how life had got too much for us. Yep. 8 or 9 years ago.
Yep, that's right.
And that in the resilience tank, it felt like we had nothing left.
Yep.
And we're on The Pastor's Heart. So why don't we start with a little of your heart on that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a story that I've told a few times before in various places. But it, you know, it's the reality of grinding away in ministry, wanting to see Jesus glorified, wanting to see gospel growth happening. Feeling the stretch of financial difficulties, of managing a large staff team, of having people with pastoral issues and whatever. And I just think what happened to me was that I don't think I had all the skills in place in order to kind of understand myself. I just got slowly, year by year, what I noticed was I'd start the year, I'd run really, really hard. My big break was over December. That was the one time in the year that I got a kind of decent break. And each year at the start of the next year, I think I felt like if I was here this year, I was then here the next year, and then here the next year. And just slowly over time, it felt like my soul was kind of being ground out by the demands of the job, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you reflect theologically, I mean, obviously there are skills, and we're going to talk about some of those skills in a moment, but theologically, what was going on, and what could you have, how do you assess things?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting question. One of the things that I've been reflecting on is that I think I'm not sure that I'd thought deeply enough about the place of my own sin and how the gospel situates me in relationship to my own sin and weakness. So I think that there were habits of life that I had, things like avoiding conflict or so wanting to please people that I couldn't say no at certain points in time. All of those things were little drivers that affected the way that I responded to people when they asked me to do things, affected the way that I thought about my job and my task and all of that kind of stuff. So I think there were deep things about who I was that I needed to tackle, but I'm not sure that I had any way of engaging with those, and so I just basically ran away from them.
How can you learn that apart from going through it and getting hurt and working out I need to fix it?
Yeah, I mean, I think at one level you can't completely. Like, I think experience is a driver, and I don't think that you can just learn this stuff in abstract. But I do think that you can probably at least have some categories in your head that help you to engage with those things in more helpful ways when you actually experience them.
Mm.
So, for example, for me, I think, you know, if you think about the gospel and what does the gospel say about your sin, forgiveness is one of the big categories that we have, mm-hmm. right? So that picture in the Psalms of God has placed my sin as far as the east is from the west.
Yep.
And there's a lovely thought, isn't there, about being separated entirely from my sin. God's not going to treat me according to my sin. There's something really precious about that. But on the flip side, in the hands of sinful people, what that means is, well, I just want my sin over there and I want to be over here and I don't want to have to engage with it or contemplate in any way, shape or form.
Mm.
Whereas the gospel, I think, gives us other resources that say, you know, Colossians 3, for example, I've been raised with Christ, therefore put to death. So that's not just it's separated from me and removed, but there's an active part that I get to play by God's grace in engaging with some of the parts of my personality that I might be able to, in God's kindness, shift over time in ways that help me to relate better to the work that I do.
Kirsty, let's come to you. And you're an organisational psychologist and you've just finished your master's on the subject of clergy resilience. And you surveyed a whole lot of us.
Yes, 277 of you. Thank you to everyone who participated.
I was one. on how we were managing, how we were coping, how we could be more resilient. Tell us, just give us a bit of an overview of what you found out. You know, some of it would be stuff you'd expected and some of it would be stuff you didn't expect, I'm imagining.
Look, it was very interesting because at the base level, it was stuff that we expected.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in terms of coming at it from a Christian perspective, the things we found were the things that we already suspected having thought about it from a biblical perspective.
Yeah.
So,
But for our benefit, what are some of those things?
We were looking at resilience and well-being for people who are engaged in ministry. So people who are chaplains, people who are working in pastoral ministry as well. And what we found, we're studying resilience in terms of reflection. And rather than just looking at resilience per se, we're looking at what is it that helps strengthen resilience. And we found that reflection is a good thing to help build resilience and well-being, but not just reflection. We really need people to move beyond thinking about what's going on and just considering the situation that they're in. We need them to come to a point of insight, of self-insight.
These two terms, self-reflection and self-insight, just reading through your thesis, they came up again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Can you differentiate between the two categories for me?
Yes, sure. So reflection is thinking about our behaviours and our feelings, considering the situations that we might be in. It's looking back at what we've experienced and how we've behaved in those situations. Whereas insight is the next step in that, if you like. It's thinking through, well, why did I behave in those sorts of ways? What are the triggers that might have caused me to feel that certain way or to behave in that certain way? And actually start to develop self-knowledge, understanding why I behave in a certain way that I do, why I engage in the sort of coping mechanisms that I engage in when I'm faced with adversity and struggle in ministry.
Do you want to make that concrete for us, Paul?
I think that in a sense that's kind of what the journey for me has been as I've come out the other side of burnout, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to realise, for example, that I was in a ministry situation where I was deeply committed to other people's well-being and good. And that means if someone came to me with a problem, I felt automatically bound by the gospel to try and help them out and look after them, which often meant that I would volunteer to do all sorts of things to help them out. I had to learn that there were things about me. I jumped into that space in some ways to soothe my own stress and anxiety about the situation, to try and make myself feel better and useful in that circumstance. And then I had to see that actually by jumping in like that, I was actually often robbing people of responsibility for doing something about their own problem. So I wasn't helping them. I was doing something that had a Christian label on it, but actually was probably just to soothe my own stress about hearing deeply distressing things about people's lives. And so I had this pattern of behaviours and habits that had, I had Christian language that placed over the top of it to make it all good. And I had to actually learn it wasn't healthy for me and it wasn't healthy for them, which then gave me, started to open up other avenues about how might I respond to somebody when they're in a difficult pastoral situation. What are my responsibilities? What are their responsibilities? And how do I engage well in that space?
Can you talk, Kirsty, I want to come in detail to kind of what do we do to get ourselves out of the situations. But before we get to that, just... what are some of them? Did you work out anything about some of the more common things that cause me stress and cause me to burn out and things like that?
Yeah. So the study was looking at a range of different what we called adversities or stresses in ministry, and we looked at personal sort of stresses, things that happen just within your family. But then we're also thinking through what are the specific things that happen within ministry. So trying to help people deal with all sorts of pastoral issues, be they marriage breakups or all sorts of other things that go on. But then there's also this intersection where your personal life and your ministry role intersect. And there were a number of different adversities or stresses that happen for people who are involved in ministry, in that where those two groups
overlap. That makes it more complex if somebody's a professional counsellor, where they can be more detached.
Exactly. And so we see a very unique set of stressors that happen for people who are in ministry.
Paul, in our pre-conversation, you were talking about it's not so much volume of work, but particular, how did you put it?
This is my own language. Kirsty can kind of put more technical language on this, but I think it's not the volume of work, but it's my emotional relationship to the work that I'm actually doing. So when I'm doing any kind of work where I feel like the task is too big and I don't have the resources to meet that, I experience challenge as a barrier, as an adversity, as a frustration, as a disappointment. I get angry about it. I get, you know, it's all of that kind of stuff. Whereas, sometimes I encounter a little problem and I see there's this thing over here and I can help this person get involved, and all of a sudden we kind of solution to that, and that actually breaks open and we find another way of doing something that's better for everybody. That's kind of when I tackle a problem and actually engage with it and make progress. Then I feel like I'm winning, so to speak. I think that sense of winning or making progress is really significant in terms of your own relationship to your ministry and environment. So if you keep getting confronted by problem after problem after problem where you feel like you have no way of fixing the problem and you don't have the resources and you're understaffed and all of that kind of stuff, you get to the point where even little barriers, you start to perceive them as gigantic.
I was in a conversation a couple of months ago with at the Nexus conference, and one of the statements that was made there was, evangelism is not harder than it was 20 years ago. It's just a different kind of hard. But the overall task of ministry, do you think it's harder? Do you think it's getting worse? Do you think this is... I mean, is it exactly... are we just the same as we were 20 years ago, or are the... more complex life stresses for the person in ministry?
I mean, I think, like, this is not a universal context. I think certainly in our context in Sydney, there are compliance issues in terms of government regulations around child protection, all of that. It's actually all good stuff.
Yeah.
But the level of paperwork, engagement, compliance issues, I think, are much more complicated than we were aware of 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there's that kind of level of stuff.
I mean, I feel like there's a pressure on me to be brilliant at preaching, brilliant at counselling stuff, brilliant at all the admin details, and I can't be brilliant at all those things.
Well, you can't. And actually, the admin details keep getting more and more complicated.
They do. And the amount of time, it feels like the amount of time that is expected of me to spend doing that stuff. It just grows and grows.
I think it really does grow and grow. And I think, too, I personally wonder, actually, how much our involvement in social media really doesn't help us. If you've got the friends that keep posting about how things are going fantastically in your ministry, in their ministry.
And mine's not going as well.
And I've just had this week where I've kind of encountered this and this and this and this. That comparison thing then has an impact on the way that I perceive my own ministry and think about what's going on in my own space, right? So I suspect that we have more successful other people in our faces, which is another driver in terms of my own perception of how I'm going, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the, I think it was in your paper, but maybe it was a conversation I've had the last couple of days, but just the issue of guilt and feeling guilt about how I approach that. What's going on there?
Yeah. That wasn't in my paper.
No, sorry. It must have been a conversation I had the last couple of days. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I think that sense of guilt, there's a difference in terms of guilt and shame that we might experience. And there's been a fair bit of research that's been done on the similarities and differences between guilt and shame. I think that there's other people have written quite a bit about that within the ministry context.
Yep.
I don't know how that plays out in terms of your own experience.
I mean, so help me, because what would be the difference between guilt and shame?
There's a bit of debate about to whether or not it's something that is owned by you or owned by others.
I mean, I think
I was thinking what you said about social media. Do you know, in that I see somebody else doing well, and I feel guilty that I can't make it all happen.
I mean, I think there's a lot of opportunities, aren't there? If you start to look around the world and go, what are other people doing? And I mean, the internet brings the whole world into my lounge room, doesn't it? Everywhere I look, there are people who are doing better than I am.
Yeah.
And particularly, I think, in a comparison kind of driven space that we live in, it's very quick for me to go, oh, I should be better at that. And, oh, I should be better at that. And, you know, the stuff you were talking about before, oh, I should be a better preacher. I need to invest time in that.
Yeah.
I should be better with people. I need to invest time in reading and thinking about that. I should be better at helping,
I need to read more books. Yeah.
I need to watch more videos. I need to read more books. I need to listen to more podcasts. I need to get better educated. I need to get the work done.
I just need more.
It's more of everything.
Well, we're all digging around for the resources, aren't we?
Yeah.
I think we've talked a bit about the demands, and we're looking for the resources that we can engage with to keep us moving forward. But I think we were talking a little bit earlier about the differences between seeing the demands that we have on us as a hindrance as opposed to a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And when we constantly are seeing these stresses as more and more hindrances stopping us from going where we need to go, that can lead us down a negative spiral. But when we start to think through, okay, well, how can this be a challenge for us? How can we reset our minds around where is this taking us? We can start to see the opportunities in the things that.
So there's an interesting psychological reframing that you can do by God's grace inside yourself around things that you experience,
Absolutely.
And so that reframing process is actually really significant in terms of resilience.
And that's what you're talking about, isn't it, with the self-reflection and self-insight?
Not so much that process of reframing, although that might be one of the coping mechanisms that you use. But in terms of reflection and insight, where we're getting at is actually thinking through, what is the situation that I'm in at the moment? What are the demands that I'm facing? And how am I actually coping with them? What are the coping methods that I'm using to really to get through the situation?
Mm-hmm.
And what we're finding is that people who reflect and gain insight on their coping methods are actually have stronger well-being and stronger resilience as well.
So I'm imagining there are some people listening to us for whom they think, okay, self-reflection, self-insight, got that. And there'll be others who say, what do you mean? I find it difficult to...
So part of this means is some people can do it quite naturally in and of themselves. But for a lot of us, it's more about having somebody help you think through the situation and help you as an objective observer to see perhaps are there patterns in the way that you tend to respond to difficulties? And have you got stuck in a set of coping strategies or coping methods that you haven't actually expanded your coping strategies, that you haven't made the most of all of the resources that are available to you? Can you nuance the sort of methods that you use? And in the research that I was looking at, I was specifically looking at what's called religious coping methods. Mm-hmm. And what we found there was that collaborative religious coping methods are the strongest ones, the ones that for the ministers that were engaged in the study, they had much stronger well-being and stronger resilience when they engaged in collaborative religious coping.
And there was collaborative religious coping. Some of them were kind of the way Protestants would do it, and then some of them were other kind of ways. Do you want to just kind of give us a bit more of a structure of what... I mean, there's a term that I'm not that familiar with, the collaborative religious coping.
Yeah.
Can you just kind of put that into layman's language for me?
So the collaborative religious coping is working with God to solve my problems, get through the difficulties.
So acknowledging he's in control and yet I bear some responsibility.
Absolutely. So there are those two components to it. So I work with God, but I'm doing things, recognising that God is in control, God is sovereign.
Mm-hmm. Can you give me a situation? tell me the kind of person you've talked at and put it into those categories.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, not so much kind of. I mean, give us a real life scenario.
Example. Well, so the sorts of things that you might see here is... perhaps Paul is a better person to actually give you some deep insights into it. But as I'm going through a difficult pastoral matter, my natural inclination might be to try to be there, to provide lots of time, lots of support. And as I'm going through that will be a good thing. But also to think through what is God's role in this? Certainly there are things that I can be doing, but what more do I need to do to recognise that God is at play in this situation, so that I do make sure that I'm praying, that I'm engaging with God throughout this, recognising that he is sovereign.
Mm-hmm. Paul?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting, isn't it? One of my observations is that in my job, when I was getting burnt out, I felt like there were lots and lots of different areas of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
There were some areas of responsibility that were very clear how to solve them and others that weren't. But if one that could be solved was screaming at me, that gave me an excuse to ignore all the other ones, for example.
Yep.
And so there were things about kind of accepting the fact that actually I was probably using some things to run away from other problems. And so part of the process then was actually being able to stop and go, you know, I'm a bit embarrassed to acknowledge this, but... you know, God tells me that he already knows what I'm like.
Yep.
The gospel tells me that I am forgiven and therefore my relationship with my sin is kind of different. I can now acknowledge that actually I'm using this thing to run away from that problem over there.
Yeah.
Whereas there are certain things about me that I need to tackle or engage.
Yeah.
But acknowledging that I need God's help in working through that and asking him to help me start to find different ways of maybe being, you know, less avoidant of certain tasks in my job. The first step, though, is actually acknowledging I'm afraid of that task. I don't feel very good at it. I'm worried, therefore, about what God thinks of me and about what other people think of me.
Mm.
How does the gospel address that complex of issues in such a way that I can start to investigate who I am and how I relate there, on the back of which I can then change the way that I interact in a particular set of circumstances?
Thank you for that. That's really helpful in terms of explaining. As you're going through that, you're reflecting on it, you're coming to an insight around how you tend to behave, and then trying to adjust the coping methods that you use throughout it. And that's what we're seeing through this research, is that that leads to better well-being and stronger resilience.
So you had two things: what God thinks of me and what other people think of me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other people thinking of me, that's a big thing, isn't it?
I think that's a huge thing in ministry, actually. And I think, like, we all know what the right answer is, right?
Yeah, I'm playing to an audience of one.
Yeah, that's right. So, like, you know, we all, for those of us who are in ministry, we preach about it constantly to other people. There's the reality of there is this truth that I believe to be true. Part of what we're talking about, I think, with reflection and insight is working out how does that truth actually relate to me as a specific human being? Mm-hmm. So where are my particular struggles with what other people think of me? You know, when am I most vulnerable? Is it when someone asks me to do something and I say no to them and then they feel grumpy with me?
Yeah.
Is it when I get up to preach because everybody's watching? Is it when I'm actually in the parish council space because they're the other senior people in the church and what they think? Like, different ones of us will actually feel different sensitivities in different places, I think. And part of the reflection insight thing is starting to get honest with yourself. What are the particular circumstances that cause you to have real problems in this space? And then how do you start to think? And I think you talked about collaborative before. For me, it's been really helpful having someone external, friends, for a time in counselling. I get professional supervision in my task at the moment, where someone comes from outside and just asks kind of pointed questions about me or whatever, but in a safe space where I can actually, rather than just avoiding those things, start to think concretely about them and then try to, well, what's a different way that I could approach that? What sorts of things can I say to myself to overcome my fears and to actually do the thing that I'm avoiding or whatever it is in that space?
You raised in your paper the issue of rumination and brooding. And it sounded to me, and I might have read this wrong, but it sounded to me like that was one of the areas that you hadn't really expected maybe just tell us what you found.
So there's a fair amount of literature that speaks to rumination and to brooding. And what we did expect to find some form of rumination and brooding, so we included a measure of it.
So what
to
is
study.
It? What is it? For
so it's a persistent return of thought around a negative situation or negative thought patterns around yourself, around the situation.
Yeah.
So and it's persistent. You really perseverate over that same issue. And so what we're finding is that there's a much higher likelihood that you will find yourself ruminating if you engage in reflection. So it's actually a danger of reflection is that you become ruminative, and if you become ruminative, there's a much higher likelihood that you will fall into depression.
Yeah.
So we don't want to go
there. So there's kind of a spiral that, I mean, whereas if I don't reflect at all...
Yeah, you're safe. Yeah. Not quite. So we don't want to...
There may
just...
be other consequences. So
I've got to do the right kind of reflection.
Absolutely, that's just it. So when we're saying
so help
reflection...
me to do that.
Yeah, so what the trick is that we actually want reflection to result in insight. So we're not just reflecting about the same thing over and over. We want the reflection to be about how am I coping with this situation? How can I change? What's a future action-oriented approach? So that it starts to get to this point where, so for example, if you've got somebody helping, you know, a psychologist or a mentor or a coach, that person can help you to have the goal, a goal or something future oriented to change the way that you adapt or that you respond to those sorts of situations, rather than always finding yourself thinking about the negative and thinking, well, this always happens to me, or why does it, you know, why am I always the one that struggles with these things?
Yeah. Thanks so much for coming in and talking to me.
Thanks, Dominic.
My guests have been, Paul Grimmon, Dean of Students at Moore Theological College, and Kirsty Bucknell. Hey, just before you go, Kirsty, you've just finished your Master's.
Yes.
Just about to do your PhD.
Yes.
What's the topic of the PhD?
Oh, it's very exciting. So we're actually looking at designing a program to help people strengthen their resilience in ministry. So the next 3 years will be designing the program, implementing it, and seeing if it actually works.
Works. Great. Well, we will look forward to getting you back and hearing more about... I mean, it's a wonderful service that you're doing for those of us in Christian ministry to help strengthen all of us. And so we're really appreciative. And so thanks very much.
Thank you.
And thanks very much to both of you for joining us on The Pastor's Heart today.
Thanks, Dominic.
Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.